This is Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? Hey, welcome to Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? I'm Molly Stillman, and this is a podcast where I get to sit down with a different guest each week and have raw, funny, often brutally honest conversations about the things that matter most: faith, business, life, and everything in between. Where we each learn how to be good stewards of the things we've been entrusted with, even our stories, and how we can use those things to serve others and leave our families, our friendships, and our communities a little better than we found them. I want to create a space where people are unafraid to be themselves and unafraid to ask the questions the rest of us are thinking. My goal is to make you laugh, cry, and laugh till you cry. My guest this week is Maiqueline Smith, also known as The Nester. She is a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author of Welcome Home and Cozy Minimalist Home. And for the past 15 years, she has been encouraging women to embrace their space, imperfections and all, and make it their own. Her home in North Carolina has been featured in Better Homes and Gardens, Ladies Home Journal, Cottages and Bungalows, and her new book, House Rules, is packed full of simple, encouraging truths and quick takeaways to implement immediately. You, the reader, will finally understand why some rooms look great and other rooms don't look quite right as you learn what changes to focus on and what not to worry about. I'm telling you, this was such a fun conversation. I have followed Maiqueline's journey for years. She is funny, she is down to earth, and she just makes home decor and all of that so approachable. But there's really so much that you can take away even just outside of the world of home decor. She's an inspiration. You're going to love her. This is such a fun conversation. So without further ado, on to my chat with Maiqueline Smith.
Today is going to be a very fun day. I have to preface this, especially for people who listen to my podcast regularly. You may notice that I am recovering being under the weather. So when this airs, I will be well. But when we are recording this, My voice is about an octave lower than normal, but I'm kind of digging it. Like, I'm kind of like, maybe how do I permanently put my voice in this range? Because it's like a little husky. So anyway, it's going to be a great day. I'm alive. We're all alive. The sun is shining, but I did want to just like go ahead and like address the elephant in the room. Because if you're a regular listener, you're gonna be like, what happened to Molly on this particular week? Anyway, all that aside, welcome to my guest, Maiqueline Smith. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled.
I'm so pumped to have you. I started following you quite a few years ago, and the first book I read of yours was Cozy Minimalist Home. And it's so funny because I loved it. I bought the hard copy, listened to the audiobook, which, like, how do you listen to an audiobook of like a, you know, like a home book? But I loved it. And I am not a minimalist. And so, like, why did I love it so much? And I don't know, but I fell in love with your voice, I think, just, and the what you bring to the table and all of that. So, but for people that don't know you, would you give us the Maiqueline 101? So tell us who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are today.
I would love to. Thanks for having me today. My name is Maiqueline Smith. And when I started on the internet back in 2007, it was scary. And so I used the Nester as like a pretend name. Also, my name has a Q in it. You can't look at it and pronounce it. So it's just tough all around. So you might, online, I'm at The Nester, like on Instagram, but I am obsessed with all things home. I've never met a home I haven't loved. I believe every home has a silver lining. I've been married 30 years and we are in our 15th home. We have moved a lot. And most of the time, it's not because I necessarily wanted to. My husband's an entrepreneur and a visionary. And, you know, sometimes we would move to a new town. And at first, we learned the hard way, like, first rent. Don't just buy a place. You need to figure out where you're going. So I've had a lot of practice setting up, packing up, you know, wanting to create home fast, because if you know you're only going to live someplace for a year and for 9 months you have art stacked behind your sofa, you're pretty much just wasting your life with all your belongings stacked behind the sofa. So I have learned to go ahead and get the stuff out and to set up home and learned how to do that. And I love getting to teach. You know, my favorite thing is figuring out why is it like, why in my last house did this art look so good over my mantle? And I moved to another house and the same art looks ridiculous over a mantle. And there are real logical reasons. And I love to figure out why, like to be a detective of that. And so I've done that for so long that I teach. I write books and teach about decorating, but it's not like aspirational decorating. I don't go to people's houses and then have a photographer come in and take pictures. I just teach out of my own house. And I like to talk about universal decorating truths that can really help us make better decisions in our home. So just like if you are learning how to spell and you learn I before E except after C, you're like, oh, I get it. Like I, if I'm writing a recipe or if I'm writing a note to my mom or if I'm working on a resume, that rule applies. It's the same with decorating. There's a lot of kind of universal truths that apply no matter how much money you have, no matter what style you have, no matter what kind of house you live in, there are universal decorating truths that can help you make really confident decisions when you're standing in the middle of the aisle at Home Goods and everything looks beautiful.
Mm. Okay, so lots to unpack there. First thing that I have to address, thing that I did not realize we had in common, was I also started on the internet in the early 2000s when it was just the wild, wild west, the frontier. And so I'm curious, like, how did you end up? Because I remember, so I started on LiveJournal in the early 2000s, and then I went to WordPress in 2007. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was a senior in college, and my roommate at the time was like, what is the web blog? Like, what is that?
Right.
What is it? What are you doing writing on the internet? Like, do people read this? So people looked at me like I had seven heads when I was doing this. And so I'm curious, did you have that same experience? And like, what made you go, I'm going to trudge forth.
Yeah. Well, I'm older than you. And so when I was getting married and having babies, there was not the internet. We all watched soap operas and nursed our babies. So it was so nice, you know, 10 years later, 8 years later, I moved from my house and I missed my sister, but she had a blog and my dad had a blog. And Pioneer Woman had a blog, and I wanted to leave comments on Pioneer Woman's blog without that. You know how they would have like the ghost avatar that was just like an outline of a man? I'm like, I don't want to look like a killer. So I literally started a blog so that I could leave comments on other people's blogs without looking like a killer. And the only thing that I felt like I had enough confidence to write about was just like taking pictures of my house and talking about it from time to time.
Okay, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the second thing that I wanted to ask you and unpack is, you know, when you said, you made a comment, and I'm paraphrasing because I'm not going to give your exact quote, but it was like something to the effect of like, when you move so much and then you have like these boxes behind the couch that you still haven't unpacked. So does that mean that you are going to judge me when I tell you I've been living in this current house for 3 years and there's still three boxes in the garage that I haven't unpacked? Like, are you going to judge me
Absolutely
for that?
Absolutely not. I would never judge you. Absolutely. Ever, ever, ever. I think there are two kinds of people that move. I think there are people that, like, if they move a lot, they say, oh, I don't want to take all my stuff with me. So I am really good at decluttering every single time they move. I am the opposite. I'm like, oh, we're going to move in a year. I better save everything because even though I don't need it in this house, I might need it in my next house. So I am no one to judge.
I love it. Okay. So in fairness, in my defense, I feel like it's like two boxes of canvases that we just had much more wall space in our last house. This house is a lot more open. And so I just don't have a place to put them. And I'm like, they're canvases with like pictures of my children. I can't get rid of them. And then in our last house, I had a cross wall. Like I had a collection of crosses, and we've been here 3 years and I still don't know where to put the cross wall. And so the third box is all of my crosses from my cross wall. So in my defense, it's not like random knickknacks. It's stuff that I'm like,
just your kids and your faith, whatever.
I know. Just my children and the foundation of my spiritual journey in boxes in my garage. Okay. Well, so now that we've gotten that out of the way, that we're both old people on the internet and you don't judge me for having three unpacked boxes in my garage, So I love your perspective. And like I had mentioned, you know, I mean, Cozy Minimalist Home was the first book of yours that I had read, and I loved it so much. And I'm not a minimalist by nature. Now, I'm not a hoarder, but I'm kind of recovering from being the child of somewhat of a hoarder. My mom died when I was in high school. And, you know, after she died, and like, especially in adult years, like for a while, my dad would bring me just like boxes of my mom's stuff and just like hand it to me and then be like, here you go. And, you know, and it would like, I remember I was like 30 and my dad brought me this box and he was like, I don't know, here's some more of your mom's stuff. And in it, and this is, she had died 13 years prior to this, like at this point. And in it was like my mom's purse that still had like cash in it and like her shoes and like stuff. And I was just like, Dad, did you not just like go through any of this? He's like, no, I just threw it all. I know. And then I was going, when I was writing my book, I was going through, you know, bags and bags and bags of her stuff and her journals and all this stuff. I mean, I found actual receipts and like the slips for CDs for eight, you know, 100 free hours for AOL.
Oh, wow.
Like I'm talking like it was like a time capsule.
Yeah.
So I give you all of that context to know that like I am not that bad, but I struggle with holding on to sentimental things and things like that. And then with that in my approach to my home is like, I want to have this like, I think, and this is my question really for you, because I feel like this is a common thing that I have in conversations with friends. It's like, you see the homes that are online, like the Pinterest perfect, the Instagram perfect homes that just everything is in its place and it's just all beautiful. And it looks like it's stepped out of a home design catalog or book or something. And then there's like real life. And so how do we best, especially as moms, kind of find that middle ground of like something that is beautiful and aesthetically like brings us joy, but then also has like the real life aspect of it. You know what I mean? Where it's got, you have the kids' drawings on the fridge, or you've got the, you know, the kids' school pictures on the wall, and, you know, the scuff marks on the baseboards. Like how have you found a happy mixture in being passionate about home decor and also like raising a family?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'm so grateful that we have so much inspiration around. I love Pinterest. I love Instagram, but we have to keep in mind, especially when we see highly styled professional photos, knowing that those are within context. And right. Once or twice I've had magazines come to my house, and I can testify that it's like 10 people at your house. They bring extra stuff because your stuff is not enough. So they bring in lots of extra decor and pillows and props. They bring in extra lighting, and whatever the shot is, everything just out of range is piles of all the excess stuff. Is someone with a steamer, is someone holding a light, and it is a moment captured in time in order to inspire. It is not meant to make anyone feel bad. In the same way that, you know, if you see someone's wedding photo, you know, like, it took a team. They had their hair done. They had their nails done. They had their makeup done. They had a lighting guy there and perfect, you know, whatever, filming guy, all of these things. We know better than to compare our everyday selfie with our best friend's wedding portrait that's hanging on our mantle. But for some reason, when it comes to home, we feel bad when we see a styled, a perfectly staged house. And we think like, well, that's that. There it is. That's it. Which in real life, it is not. So I am a cozy minimalist, which means I want the most amount of style with the least amount of stuff. And I'm also an imperfectionist, which means I 100% believe that it doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful. And as someone who considers herself like a leader in that area, that means it's my job to go first and show how I cozy minimalize and how I embrace imperfections. And, you know, I think it's important for, if you follow people in the home topic online, be sure you're following people that show the real life, that show, I mean, I don't want to just see someone's dirty laundry all the time. I want to see styled photos, but I also want to see the fact that they are like a human and not just a robot living in a dream world with 10,000 servants living there with them. So it is a balance. And I think it's our job to make sure that we are consuming the real life people.
I think your comparison to the wedding photo was like, it was like a light bulb moment for me just now. Like you just gave me like a revelation. I'm just like, I don't think I've ever, because I think too, you know, it almost equated to like when you see Brittany Mahomes on the cover of swimsuit, you know, Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Like Brittany Mahomes is a beautiful woman, but she's 100% airbrushed and there's a million teams that have like made her look flawless on the cover of, you know, Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. So like comparing that to real life, you know, is not possible. And so I don't think I'd ever really equated what we see necessarily online. And even, you know, even if it's not, you know, a magazine, it's just, you know, so often you see, you hear of a home decor blogger or somebody that's like, oh, you know, they take a really nice picture, but then they pan over and it's like all of their stuff has been like shoved into a corner. And so it's just like, it's all smoke and mirrors at this point.
Yeah.
But that, you know, I think that is like a larger issue in our culture of just like this comparison of like what we see online to like what is realistic. But I love your, like I said, I love your approach to it. And I also really love that you refer to yourself as an imperfectionist, because I don't think I've ever really heard anybody refer to themselves as, I hear people say like, I am a perfectionist, but I don't think I've ever really heard anybody refer to themselves as an imperfectionist. Unpack that for me, because I think that there's a whole word there.
Yeah, there truly is. I did write an entire book about it because I was living in a rental and trying to decorate my house. And if you've ever lived in a rental, then you know you don't have a lot of control. And it's so easy just to blame your landlord and to say, I'm just going to wait on my next house. But I lived in like 3 or 4 rentals in a row. And I just thought, I'm really tired of waiting on my next house to do and use my home the way I want to use it. Mm-hmm. So I decided to pay attention to what I could change, what things that I liked about the house, and just move forward and make it mine. And so that was my whole first book. All the photos were taken in a rental house. I couldn't change much about it, but I changed enough. And I just decided to kind of take back my kid's childhood and not think, well, one day in our next house, maybe I can finally hang those pictures on the wall and paint the wall the color I want and hang the chandeliers that I want and all of those things. I decided it was time and I wasn't going to wait for my next house anymore.
Yeah. You know, you remind me of, and I feel like I've talked about him on my podcast so many times, but my friend Daniel Grothy, who is, he's a pastor out in Colorado and he has written 2 books, but his second book is called The Power of Place, and it's Choosing Stability in a Rootless Age. And he has, it's a very powerful book, highly recommend it, but he has a chapter in there, where, and like this, the whole like crux of the book, and I have a point to this, is like how in the culture that we currently live in, it's this culture of like wanderlust, and like we get bored with where we're living, so we move, and we get bored with our church or the pastor says something we don't like, and we up and we peace out. The marriage gets hard and we choose divorce or whatever it is. Like we live in a culture that is just forsaking roots, putting down roots. And one of the things he talks about in there is like when he first got married, he was living in, it was like an apartment with his wife, and his wife like wanted to decorate it and like make it feel like home. And he couldn't understand why at first. And then eventually like came around to like the notion of wherever you are, like there is power in actually like putting down roots in that place and like making that place feel like a home. And so like the power of the physical place that you live. And I bring that up because I feel like that speaks so much to like what you were saying is like one of my nearest and dearest best friends in the world. She's like my sister from another mister. She just turned 40 this year. She's been a single mom since she was 22. So she had her child when she was 22. She's raised her daughter entirely on her own for 18 years. Like she's my hero. She's just an incredible woman. She just turned 40, and she just at 40 years old, she just bought her first house, and she's only rented ever. And so here she is at 40, you know, her daughter's about to graduate high school, and she bought her first house. And she was so cute, like asking all these questions, like, well, am I allowed to paint like whatever color I want? Like, you know, all these questions of like, well, can I hang stuff on the walls, right? Like, but I'm thinking I might put up a fence. Am I allowed to put up a fence? And my husband and I are like, yes, like that's what happens when you own your home. It's like you can do whatever you want. And for her, it's like this revelation of like, oh my gosh, yes, this is my place that I get to make my own. But I think that there is power too in helping people that maybe are in the rental stage or wherever they are in life, maybe that feel, you know, military families, things like that. So my question with all of that is like, what advice do you give to people who are in that stage where maybe they're feeling a little bit rootless and they're feeling like, I don't know if I'm going to be here 6 months or a year, or if I'm just renting, or if I'm a military family or whatever, like, and they just almost feel like they don't know what to do as far as like making their house feel like home and not just like a cinder block, you know, or like cardboard box.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I've never had anyone come to me and say, hey, can you help me make my house look pretty so I can make all my neighbors jealous and be the envy of all of my friends? Like, I've never heard that. People want to feel better about their house so that they love when they wake up in the morning and look around and walk into the kitchen. It doesn't feel stressful. It feels like them. People want to have a home that feels like it represents what they believe in, what's important to them, so that they can volunteer to host, you know, the small group or the baby shower or whatever is happening with their friends. We really want to create a home that we feel confident in, not to show off, but so that we can use it. And I find there's lots of different reasons for why we put that off. But a lot of times, just the very first reason is because we either don't believe we're capable, or we believe that we have to wait for better circumstances. And I'll tell you, the perfect circumstance will never come. If you're renting, you feel like you have to wait till you own. If you own, you are overwhelmed with the fact that there are no limitations and you can put a fence up, you can paint the wall, like the sky is the limit. If you have a big budget, then you feel like you don't have enough limitations. Like, actually, limitations are very helpful. They help you get creative. So if someone is rich, that's the worst for them because they will have no idea what to do. So just making a decision and getting started and believing that it's worth it to make a small change in your home. Why? So you can use it, so you can enjoy it. If you find yourself fully using and enjoying your home, you probably don't need me. You're probably doing everything right. Like, don't question it. I think that is amazing because the whole point is that you love using your home. You love being in your home. You feel confident having people over. If you have, I don't care what your sofa looks like. If you feel that way, then you're doing it right. If you don't feel that way and you hate your sofa and you're giving it dirty looks, it's really going to hold you back from having a great conversation with your next door neighbor as she sits on the sofa that you hate because you're so distracted by the looks of your sofa. That's the person that I want to help because I can help you figure out how to buy a sofa that you won't hate tomorrow, or how to make some other changes maybe in your room that will help your sofa fit in a little bit better.
I love that. Just like, I can picture the person that's just sitting there and it's like, I can't focus on this conversation because I hate that couch so much.
Yeah.
That was kind of us when we moved into this house. When we first moved here, it's a 1980s farmhouse, which I realize sounds strange, but it was like everything was closed. Everything was like walls, doors, walls, doors, walls, doors. And our living room area, like kitchen living room area, it's just very oddly shaped. And so when we first moved in, we like took out some walls and took out some doors because it was way too many walls and doors, but it's just oddly shaped. And so I remember like when we bought it, I was like, I don't know how to orient this living room in a way that makes sense. And I didn't want to, like, our couch from our last house wasn't going to work in this house. And so I just bought like a cheap, I want to say it was like $300 couch on Facebook Marketplace that I was like, this is a placeholder for the time being. And we had that couch in this house for over 2 years, but we hated it. It was the worst. It was so uncomfortable. It was just everything about it. We could not stand. And, but we were being really picky about like what we really wanted to put in the living room. And then when we finally like, not that this is like an ad for rooms to go, but we'd gone to like a bunch of different places. And finally one day, like we were sitting on the couch and we were so miserable sitting there. We were trying to have a family movie night. It's like not comfortable. And my husband's like, I hate this couch. Like, you know, even my 7-year-old son was like, Mom, this couch is the worst. And so I was like, all right, we're going out. We're going to go to rooms to go and we're just going to find something. And like, thankfully, you know, spoiler alert, Rooms to Go has a new line of, they're like customizable, like modular furniture. I don't know. It was called Modular One. Anyway, that's what we ended up getting. I say all that to say that like, once we got that the couch that we currently have, like in our living room, it was like amazing how much it just transformed that as like the hub for the kids wanted to like have sleepovers on the couch and they like invited all their friends over and like they were just like putting blankets and building forts on it. And like, it's amazing how something like little like that, little big, just changed everything about how the central hub of our home felt.
Yeah.
And that's especially like when, depending on what you want your home to be, if you want it to be the kind of home where you want people to like come and stay and not leave, you know, or whatever it is, or your kids, I don't know. It was amazing how that all, it just transformed it.
I love that. First of all, I hope Rooms to Go sponsors this because that was,
I know,
such a good pitch.
I know, there you go, everybody.
You know, I think what's interesting too is that your kids notice. Like, they don't know anything about design, but they notice the change. And that's what good design does. And even one of my house rules is hate the sofa, hate the space. It kind of kills me to say that because I don't want to say like there are some sofas that are hopeless. But that is true, that if we personally despise the sofa in our house, we have to do something to change. Like, maybe you can slip cover it, or maybe you can do something to that sofa, or maybe you trade it out and get something different. But I equate it to like, if you put on an outfit and your jeans are the worst, you hate the way they feel, you hate the way they look on you, they are uncomfortable. There's no amount of cute hairstyle and adorable shoes and perfect blouse that's going to make you love your outfit when you hate the jeans. And I feel it's the same way with the largest piece in each room, that most functional piece that kind of sets the tone. And in your family room, that's going to be the sofa. If you hate your sofa, if you despise it, I mean, that is going to make a big difference. And you just explained that for me. I don't even have to explain it. So there, I love that your story did that perfectly.
I want to take a quick break from our conversation to let you know that my new book, If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry, How Death, Debt, and Comedy Led to a Life of Faith, Farming, and Forgetting What I Came Into This Room For, is now available. It's in paperback, it's in audiobook format, it's in Kindle or e-reader format, ebook format. You can get it wherever books are sold online. In person, you can go to your local independent bookstore or Barnes & Noble. And I am just telling you, the feedback that I'm getting and just hearing from so many of you who have picked up the book and are reading it has been one of the most encouraging things. I'm so beyond grateful. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for how you have helped this book come into the world. And it's a really terrifying thing. And so to hear the support from you really means more than I can possibly say. So if you have not already picked up your copy of If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry, please go do that. It would mean the world to me. And let me know how the book is impacting you. Be sure to tag me on social media at StillBeingMolly. And you can use the hashtag If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry to share your review. Without further ado, back to my conversation with Michael Lynn Smith.
Okay, so obviously I want to talk about your new book, House Rules. But before I do that, and this is actually a question I meant to ask earlier, and then I ended up going down a tangent because this tends to be what I do, and I'm okay with it. It's my show, so I do what I want. but I am curious, like, you know, obviously you talked about kind of how you got started in creating the Nester, and, you know, you created a blog so that you wouldn't look like a ghost online when you commented on the Pioneer Woman's blog, which just cracks me up. But what do you think is the genesis of your passion for this? Like, do you look back, were you the kid who had the crazy room, or were you the kid who like you would rearrange your room every chance you got? Or like, where did the seed of this passion, where was it birthed from?
I think that sometimes we think people were born, like, you were born with a decorating gene, or you were born with a green thumb. I don't believe that at all. But I do believe that sometimes we, as children, are really passionate about something. And I was passionate about home and rooms and furniture. And even when I played Barbies, I was not playing Barbies, much to my sister's chagrin. I was not having Skipper run away and have boyfriends and have dramatic stories. All I was doing was playing with their furniture. That's all I wanted to do, was have the rooms, play with furniture, get more furniture, set them up and play. And then I, yes, decorated my bedroom. And yes, when my parents went away, when I was in high school, I did not plan a big party like you were supposed to do in the 90s. I rearranged their living room and made my sister help me move furniture. And then I blindfolded them and surprised them when they got home, and my mom left it that way. So I was learning the basics of design without even knowing it, just because I was automatically passionate about it and thought it was fun, which meant I had a little bit of a head start than my friends who, you know, got married when they were 25 and then were like, what do I do? I had already hot glued flowers to my wall and moved my bed around in my bedroom and knew why, maybe kind of figured out why it looked weird over there and why I liked it over there, and kind of had this background of what I did and didn't like, which gave me a head start, which I think was helpful.
Okay. I think that is fascinating. And I love that you, and this kind of even speaks to one of the things you talked about in the beginning, is like, you love almost the problem solving nature of it, is like being Detective Smith and trying to figure out like, why did this painting look right here and why it doesn't look there? I know that there is not a clear black and white answer, but I'd be curious, like, what are some of the things that you have discovered in discovering that?
It is amazing. I could talk about it all day, forever.
Please, for the rest I love of time. This.
And I wrote a book with 100 of them. There are logical reasons.
Perfect segue.
I know.
Perfect segue.
Let me tell you, there are logical reasons why some things look good and some things look ridiculous together. Decorating is really, what you're doing is you're creating little families. You're basically playing Barbies, except with stuff. Everything in your room, everything behind me, if you can see this on video, which I don't know if people can, but it's in a relationship together. So you don't get to make a decision blindly without considering the other things that are around, which really helps inform why maybe your art at your last house looked great over the mantle, and your mantle was wood with painted brick, and then at your new house, the mantle is twice as tall and it's white and it has no texture. And why that same painting looks ridiculous? Well, things have changed. The relationship is no longer the same. So thinking about scale, thinking about texture, thinking about contrast, those are all things that come into play that once you put words to it, it kind of takes away like the mystifying, I don't know, we think like on HGTV that a designer is someone who walks into an empty room and then picks all the furniture and then the rugs, the drapes and the lighting, the wall color and the wall art and the accessories, and boom, the room looks great. They're a good decorator. Nope. In real life, what happens is we have a room, we have some stuff that we kind of like and some stuff we have to keep. And then we have a little bit of a budget, and we have to troubleshoot, and we have to decide what to focus on and what not to worry about. And how in the world do we do that? You almost, you know, like when you get a dishwasher and the lights flashing. So you go to the back of the manual and you're like, okay, it's one of these problems. You need to either, you know, do this.
Yes, exactly.
That is what this house rules book that I wrote. It's troubleshooting for decision making for when you are actually making design decisions in your home. So it is things like contrast is queen if you want to be seen, or nail that scale. So getting you to think about the relationship of scale. You know, a lot of us, we buy a sofa. It's 98 inches long. It's one of the largest pieces in our home. And then we say, oh, I'm going to sit at my sofa at night. I need a lamp to read by. What do? We get our husbands from his bachelor days, 12-inch little bitty teeny tiny lamp. And we set it next to it. And we're like, well, that looks ridiculous. But that's all I know. All I know is it looks ridiculous. I don't know why. And I don't know what to do about it. When you have some guidance, you can understand that, oh, the lamp is in a relationship with the sofa and the balance is off because the sofa is the largest thing in the room and the lamp is one of the smallest. Like, let's get a lamp that actually is a larger size. Let's nail that scale. Also, things of scale, we read as risky and we also see as having style. So when you get a lamp, it's wonderful because it's functional. Now you can see to knit or to read your book at night, but also a lamp can add style to a room. So it's like multi-purpose. I think just lamps in particular, one of the things, like, it's like one of America's worst decorating mistakes. We rely on the overhead light. We've all seen the memes, but it's true. Like, lamp lighting with beautiful shades, it makes us look younger and fresher. It creates little intimate pockets of, like, welcome over to this corner and welcome to this corner. And so recognizing that if you purchase a lamp or if you shop your house for a lamp or if you get one secondhand, it's an opportunity to add a specific style. So knowing that you want to nail that scale with your lamp. Now, based on your style, you get to pick out the lamp base and the lamp shade that you like, depending on if you're mid-century modern or an English cottage style, but you want to make sure you get the right scale. So that's the kind of things that I'm into.
Okay. I love it. So, well, this, again, I think is the perfect segue into really talking about your new book, House Rules, which when this airs, will come out next week. So everybody go pre-order it right now because the pre-orders, as we've talked about, are very helpful. Very, very helpful. Okay. So where did the idea for this book come from? And I know that it's 100 rules and you kind of alluded to some of them here, but where did the idea for this book come from and what was your hope and goal in writing it?
The idea came after I wrote my first three books. I wrote a book on imperfect circumstances, the nesting place. It doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful. So, what do you do when you don't have a perfect house? You don't have perfect access to everything. Then I wrote a second book on decorating in the right order called Cozy Minimalist Home, more style, less stuff. Then I wrote what I thought would be my last book about decorating through the seasons and hosting. I'm like, I have said it all. Well, then a reader who had all my books came up to me and she said, oh, I have all your books, but I haven't really changed anything because I wasn't born with a decorating gene. And I just thought I had failed her. Like, there is no decorating gene. And so the teacher in me just thought, how can I teach decorating basics in a way that feels different from your average decorating book that has just, I love decorating books. I have a bigger collection than anyone I know and I love them all and I want them all and I hope they never stop. But a lot of them are just aspirational photos that if you want to really read, you might get one or two takeaways, but they're more about showing you what could be. And I really wanted like a school textbook done in a fun and quirky, dumb way with memorable rules that when you're standing at Home Goods, you can remember the art of the mirror is what it reflects. And therefore, you know, you think about where you're going to actually put a mirror in your house. So it's not reflecting your ceiling fan that you hate and that you need to dust, but it's reflecting something that you love.
Okay. I love that because I also kind of think that I didn't get a decorating gene, but then I like to then sometimes fake it till I make it, if that makes sense. But then that's encouraging that you're kind of like, nobody has a decorating gene. It's just, yet maybe you do because you were like decorating with.
No, I just started earlier. I just learned to mess up and not care earlier. It's easier to do that when you're 12 than when you're 32.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hone in on that, like learning to mess up, because I think that that's a thing. And this could be like a whole word for somebody just in general.
Yeah.
Is like giving ourselves, whether it's something as like quote unquote, as superficial, quote unquote, as home decor versus like career choices
Yeah.
or fashion choices or trying something, like giving yourself the permission to mess up.
Yeah.
And this is actually a conversation that I've been having a lot with one of my children. I will not name which one, but those that know my children will know which one I'm talking about. And it's because one of my children, I do not know where this child got this from, but is in a lot of really good ways, like incredibly driven, incredibly hardworking, like, but a perfectionist to the point that sometimes I worry in that, like, when this child does not achieve perfection, becomes a very like self-sabotaging, if that makes sense, or like almost self-deprecating, like, I'm the worst, I've failed because I wasn't like, I didn't get it right exactly this time. So I've had a lot of conversations with this child on like, you can't set standards for yourself that are unachievable or like unsustainable, you know? Yes. Like giving, like talking to her about like giving yourself permission to mess up, to make mistakes, because if you don't mess up and if you don't make mistakes, then you're not going to grow and you're not going to learn anything. And so even at a young age, you know, this child is having to learn that. And then I realized one night after having a conversation with this child about this, I began to remember that this is almost like kind of the battle that I had as a kid, where like, if I did mess up, then it was like, I felt like I was a failure, but that wasn't necessarily a message that was like being told to me, but how, especially like the kids of like the 80s and 90s, like we kind of grew up in just a very different, like the younger Gen Xers and the geriatric millennials, like we kind of grew up in this like weird phase of life where there was like this standard that was put on us that almost became like unachievable. And then we get into adulthood and we like enter adulthood and like a really difficult part of like the economy and like all of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this standard that's been then placed on us that then we feel like we can't make mistakes. And then it bubbles down, trickles down into everything. Like, well, I can't, I mean, into even our home. Yeah. And so, I didn't even know I was going to say all that. But I think it's an important thing is like, giving yourself a permission to make a mistake, to learn and to mess up, then gives you opportunity to grow. And that's in other areas as well. So I realized I just went on a preachy tangent. I'd be curious, like what you're, you know, like, how do you talk about this?
Yeah.
About what that looks like, especially when it comes to just home stuff and life stuff.
It's one of the main things I talk about. I think it's one thing to nod and say, oh yeah, it doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful. It's another thing to be a practicing imperfectionist and to decide that accepting and moving forward in the midst of imperfect circumstances is a skill that you want to have, is a skill that you want to pass on to your kids. And if you cannot take a risk in the privacy and safety of home, which is supposed to be the safest place on earth, if you can't make a nail hole on your wall, if you can't allow yourself to pick the wrong paint color and then have to take another weekend and another $55 can of paint and laugh it off, then you are not allowing yourself to have a full life and to teach your kids how to take a risk. One of my house rules is risk, take one and pass it on. And talking about how our kids are watching us, and if we can't make the nail hole or pick the paint color because our fear is so debilitating that we're going to get it wrong, how in the world can we encourage them to try out for the team, to, you know, apply for the job, whatever it is? If we can't do that in our own little bedroom, in the hallway, like, where else can we take a risk if not at home? Like, if you can't get up right now and make a nail hole in your wall, and I have plaster walls too, and there are nail holes, it is not a mistake. You don't have to repair it. You just fill it in and you get to move on. Another house rule that I think it could be helpful is you can't ruin something you already hate. Did we talk about this already? No. Okay.
No, we did not.
It's a really great way to make a baby step into risk, because obviously if you're like new at taking risks in your home, okay, I'm going to make decorating. I don't want you to go out and buy like 10 gallons of chartreuse paint to paint the exterior of your house. Like, let's baby step your way into risks. So start with something you already hate. You can't ruin something you already hate. Maybe you have an old painting in your basement that you don't like. Well, you could paint over it. Maybe you have a piece of furniture sitting in your garage you've been meaning to take to the Goodwill. Well, maybe you refinish that. You baby step with something that you can't lose. You set yourself up for the win. Instead of like, I'm going to buy this $200 dresser off of Facebook Marketplace. I'm going to stand in the light of day in front of all my neighbors in the driveway and paint it where everyone can see and everyone has an opinion. No, no, don't start like that. Baby step your way and build your confidence in the same way that you do other skills. This is just another skill, but allow yourself to learn it and allow yourself to make mistakes.
Okay. Well, I didn't know this at the time, but I definitely have a thing in my home that I hated and I baby stepped my way and I was like, okay, so I'm gonna tell you the story. So when we bought this house, the living room kitchen area is just odd. But in the center of our living room, like the centerpiece of our home, is this massive, I mean, just enormous two-story, like cathedral ceiling, boulder fireplace. So we have a fireplace in the middle, but like it's boulder rock wall from the floor to the second floor cathedral ceiling of rocks. And at first it was like really jarring to me and I couldn't figure out like why I hated it so much. And I mean, there are parts of it that I cannot change. Like where the fireplace is, if I had built this house and I would have put the fireplace in the center. The fireplace is not centered on it. It drives me crazy. The fireplace is like to the left. And then to the right, there was like, at the time when we bought it, there was like two cabinets. So like this boulder rock wall that's like gray boulders, but then it was like a cabinet to the right of the fireplace and a cabinet above it. And they were like cherry chocolate brown. And then a enormous, like the biggest mantle ever over this fireplace that was also like cherry chocolate brown. And it just like, it was just big. Everything was just big and brown. And I just remember being like, this is just such a massive part of the home. We love everything about this property. We love everything about this home. Like, I'm going to die here. Like, I'm never moving here. So like, I can't change this giant rock wall. Like, it's not going anywhere. So how can I like make this so it's not like an eyesore? And I realized, I was like, okay. So I did some investigating. Turns out that the bottom cabinet to the right of the fireplace was actually wood storage. So we just removed the cabinet and then it was like rock wood storage. I was like, already better getting rid of one of the brown cabinets. And then I was like, the way the mantle is again, it's so massive that, and it's like built into the rock. So it's not as simple as just like taking the mantle out. Like it's, if we're going to do that, we're going to have to like hire somebody. They're going to have to cut. I mean, it's going to be a massive, expensive project to get that mantle out. So I was like, okay, so what do I do? So I literally took a picture of the rocks. I went to Sherwin-Williams and I was like, I'm just going to find a paint color that is like as close to the darkest color of the rocks as I can. And then I'm just going to paint the cabinet and I'm going to paint the mantle. And maybe that will like make it not so terrible. And the change that it made overnight, just slapping a coat of paint on this one brown cabinet and this brown giant mantle, it just like now it's like, I don't even think about the fact that there's this big mantle there. Yes, well, someday I'd like to maybe invest in like hiring somebody to come in and actually redoing it and doing a different mantle. But I was like so proud of myself that I just like this massive thing that I felt like there was nothing I could do about it. But how much something little like that, because what you were saying is like, I was like, what do I have to lose? Like, I already just despise this so much that I can't make it worse.
Yeah. I love what you did too. You actually did contrast as queen. If you want to be seen, you did the opposite. You said, I don't want to see this stuff. So I'm going to paint it all the same color and it'll just disappear. I got to go.
Okay. All right. So, so we are, we're running out of time. But I, so as we are wrapping up here, tell us where people can, get connected with you and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm at thenester.com talking about home stuff all the time. I have a podcast called House Rules. I'm on Instagram talking about house stuff some more. The book is available wherever books are sold. And if you pre-order the book, if this sounds like something that you know you want, we have a special thank you gift. I brought a camera crew to my 15th house here, my Queen Anne Victorian. We walked through every room and I talked about which house rules helped me make the decisions in my home. So super fun getting to see a tour.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with me. And just thank you for all that you're doing and for just, this was so much fun.
Thanks, Molly. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you loved it. I would love to know what you learned or if there was something that inspired you or encouraged you. Please let us know on social media. You can find me at Still Being Molly or at Can I Laugh Pod on the socials. And would you take a moment to head on over and subscribe and leave a review and all of those things? It really does help us to know what you're liking and how the show is impacting you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And of course, as always, thank you to the team at Third Wheel Media for producing the show. And for you, I hope something this week makes you laugh till you cry. We'll see you next week. Bye.